Wes joins me. I'm telling you something, Wes. I'm just glad I have my voice back, man. I spent days of not talking, and as you know, it's very difficult for me to shut up for an extended period of time.
Do not know, and I send my best to your lovely wife, my brother.
Listen, she was just excited that I was quiet, and then she started going, "This is weird. You need to start talking again." So I'm back.
Did you
I'm
write
back
the
with
notes
you tonight.
Like I told you.
What's that?
Were you writing the notes like I told you?
I did use the notebook a few times, and then I also just didn't say a lot either, which was it was all just torture, man. You know how this is. I had so much pent up energy to come in here today. I was like, "Good, I've got like 8 hours today of all of this, and I'm totally fine with that." I was talking about the XFL a minute ago. I want to get to the NBA All-Star Weekend with you, but I do want to get into now week two of the XFL, and specifically the Defenders, because you are the in-house rules analyst. Is that actually how? You have like five jobs. I don't know what it is, which one I can keep track.
For the XFL, I'm the in-game rules analyst.
Thank
that
you.
Is correct. Yeah.
And you know what? You and I have both talked at length about how much, I think we both agree, love the rules and love the way that the league has been very progressive with that. The overall product of the games, though, has also been really fun, which is different than the previous XFL or the Alliance or any of these other small leagues they tried that just don't seem to work.
I think what they did was, instead of taking football and reworking it, it was, let's take traditional football and take one step to the left, and that's our sweet spot. And I think with the rule changes, most notably the kickoff, I think the kickoff seems to be everybody's favorite. Because if you look at the traditional model in the NFL, how many kickoffs are turning into touchbacks, fair catches, and just had no return at all? Versus in the XFL, now that play matters. And so that's what makes it fun. The pace of the game is pretty much similar to the NFL, but it's just one of those situations where if you throw a couple of wrinkles in there, it starts to make every play valuable. And as a fan, especially for fans who came out last week, 2 days ago in 39 degrees, I mean, come on. If you're going to come out there in that kind of weather, you want to see some exciting football. And that's what the XFL has been able to deliver, especially in these first 2 weeks.
Plus, just from a football standpoint, DC wants winning football. And we've had it. They're 2-0, and they've looked really good, which I think goes a long way for fans to starve for good football in this city.
They've been clamoring for it. I don't know how many people have told me, it feels so good to see football in D.C., winning football in D.C., and the fact that the environment is rich and wanting to have the relationship with the fans. Things are so less formal. You saw the beer snake?
Yeah, I mean, that was amazing.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they started a stands tradition here in D.C. with a beer snake. I was down on the field, and we looked up like, are they stacking cups?
Yep.
And it got a little bit bigger, By the time it was done, it was 10 to 12 rows long, and they ended up carrying that thing all the way out of the stadium, all the way to the recycling bin. And it made SportsCenter, it lit social media all up. So it's just, that's the environment that you want. And if there's any teams that are looking and inquiring about passion from a fan base when it comes to football in D.C., I would hope that they would see that it can be done in the footprint of the city.
And it's funny because the XFL as a whole, and clearly the Defenders are part of this, is they make themselves so accessible, not just with the broadcast, but with social media. I mean, you watch how you feel like, you see how they get involved with fans and they interact, and it's not a bunch of, like, it just feels like the NFL is sort of the arrogant league, and the XFL is the fun, all-inclusive league, it feels like to me.
It feels like the social media people at the XFL is like your best friend running the company account. You're like, oh, man, like they're actually tweeting cool stuff. And it doesn't feel like it's top-down language. It feels like it's face-to-face language. And I think people can see that, and it translates through social media and even through word of mouth. You can feel when a brand wants to be on the same level as you. Instead of talking at you, the XFL has decided to talk to you and with you, and you can feel that.
Is there a possibility down the road, I would assume it would have to probably be next year, that the XFL could bring guys that aren't eligible for the NFL yet, you know, a college freshman or sophomore that's eventually going to be a star? Because that's like the one thing I want to see. I want this league to grow. I want it to survive. I want it to be sustainable. I hope that they can find ways to continue to keep that juice as we go on, even just, you know, 7-8 weeks from now this year. I know you can't do that with all the college guys necessarily, but could that be something that you would see happening down the road?
I definitely think that's something they're going to have to explore, because I'm looking at the competition on the field, and obviously these are still, even though these are not NFL guys at their prime as of right now, because there are a lot of guys that have played in the NFL, But they're still a step above collegiate players. So there is a window where you're getting better than college, but not quite NFL. And there's a middle ground. If they can figure a way to continue to get some of those names from guys who may not have had the opportunity that they wanted at their initial school, or their college maturation might not have worked out the way they wanted to, or even a stint at the NFL. If you can get those guys in and continue to build names like Cardale Jones, the fact that you have a 13-0 starting quarterback in this city is unbelievable. He is the face of the league, and the team is destroying people, and it's fun. It's fun to watch that happen, and that's a great story that if you're able to capitalize and find more like that, you'll continue to grow the league.
Talking to Wes Hall, of course, DC Sports Live with me on NBC Sports Washington. NBA All-Star Game last night. A lot of fun. I know they changed the rules, and a lot of people kind of clowned it at first. I was certainly one of them. Like, this is a really complicated list of new rules and ideas for this. But the ending was really what we would have expected, other than an ending on free throws. I like the idea, and I like that the NBA is taking steps to at least try new things, especially in something that's really just an exhibition.
Well, when it came to the rules part, obviously you heard the title I have for the other league. So I was like, ooh, another set of new rules.
Yeah.
How fun can this be? Like, what do I have to memorize now? But I was super excited about the new format. I loved it because one of the things that we have all criticized the NBA All-Star Game for at least the past, gosh, I'd say 10, 15 years is absolute lack of competition, where it was more about the pregame show intro and then the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. And other than that, we didn't really care. Well, this upped the ante, and I think they hit a home run with this one, switching sports metaphors, because you took the competition and stretched it throughout the entirety of the game. Adding the charity component to each quarter made it valuable. And then when you get to the end of the game, the overall cumulative win also carried its weight. I will make this change to it next year. Game can't end on a free throw.
Yes, I'm 100% with you.
I'd say just we can't do that. So we'll play 21 for the next 3 hours. We're not ending on a free throw because that kind of took a little wind out of the sails, just for me. But overall, it was so fun to watch the best of the best. That's who the All-Stars are. The best of the best. And then their best of the best, which were the final five on both teams in the fourth quarter. That's what you want when you say NBA basketball. If this is the brand we're going to show to the world, that's how you do it.
And listen, I know there was a controversy in the slam dunk contest, but you know what people have been doing for the last 48 hours? Talking about the slam dunk contest. It was actually fun. Again, it was competitive. Whether you think Aaron Gordon should have won or not won, or who should have gotten a 9 or a 10, or the only issue I had was that they were dunking over guys too much. They should have not constantly had to jump over somebody to make these dunks. But that being said, that was fun too. I think overall, it was a success for something that at times, like the whole All-Star weekend, and sometimes people just get kind of bored with.
Well, it's the thing, because we feel like we've seen every dunk done, and you know, it's not until we see something else happen that we go, oh my gosh, that's insane. But yeah, a lot of dunking over people, but it's hard because at the end of the day, it's still basketball. It's still a basketball goal. You got to jump, you got to dunk, that's it. There's only so many props you can have in it. I will say to the voting part, the controversy, because I really felt Aaron Gordon got the short end of the stick on that one, and I'm not really a fan of give it to them both, because the whole point of competition is for there to be one winner. But if they can figure out a way to fix this judging system where if you've got five people on the panel and fans are going crazy, why don't they have an actual Twitter vote and let fans do a vote and we actually make that being the deciding factor. And that takes the pressure off the judges that are there on site. Because think about it. You think Dwayne Wade wants to not vote for the guy who plays on the team that he retired from in his hometown? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, make it a fan vote, and then if people want to get mad at anybody, the NBA can hold the mirror up to the fans and say, hey, you were the guys that were the deciding factor on this.
Does that mean that we can take away the fan vote for All-Star starters? Because I'd love for that to go away.
I will gladly trade that. I will gladly trade the fan vote for All-Star for the fan vote for dunk contest. Yes, we have an accord. I will shake. Where do I sign?
I'm in. You and I are both in agreement on that. Can you imagine if Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James had actually both been on the Lakers with Anthony Davis? Like, just watching that, I'm like, that would have just been so unfair.
The ghost of David Stern would have shaken his hand from heaven and said, no, 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 I'm stopping this trade from happening. We cannot let it. But I will say this. It was fun to watch those guys play together.
It was
fun.
Yeah.
Like, I know we give him a lot of guff during the regular season. Kawhi for being his own oddity. LeBron for being LeBron. But it was fun to watch those guys put all that stuff aside and really just come out and play for the love of basketball, for the sport that they love, in honor of Kobe. And really, they gave a gift to the fans. They took it seriously because, as I've always said, Nick, the money that fans spend for this NBA consumerism, whether it be merchandise, whether it be attending games, watching games, that money is real. So the least that the players can do is give that same thing back to the fans. Give me real basketball. I give you real money, give me real basketball.
Yeah, and I know Bradley Beal obviously wasn't in it and should have been in it in terms of the way he's played as a player. We can argue whether winning team, losing team, that's a whole other discussion there. But it was nice to see a couple of young players for the Wizards involved in All-Star Weekend, because we know this team is rebuilding. We know that it's all about just youth and evaluating essentially guys that, other than maybe Rui Hachimura, are going to be, you know, role players for them. But we're seeing some promise from the young guys on this roster, and a couple of them being involved is a really good sign for the movement forward for this roster.
Well, I love that Rui got such a great opportunity with the Rising Stars Challenge. He and Mo as well, but especially Rui, because I think he had like four or five dunks early, like literally the first 4 minutes. It was like, Rui dunk. Rui dunk again, and Rui's dunking on you again. great branding for him. But then Davis in the three-point contest, that 26 he put up in the first round, I was like, oh, wow, he can really do this. But then we knew that there were other monsters in that competition as well, so shout out to those guys. But again, to your point, it was fun seeing the Wizards, who are normally not necessarily a brand that gets the type of national spotlight that we wish they would get, being able to step up, take advantage of it, not seem awkward, seem fun, and enjoying the weekend and really showcasing the talent that they have. The only thing missing, like you said, was Brad. But I have a sneaking suspicion we won't have to deal with that problem next year.
Yeah, I mean, considering the points he's put up this year and the year that he's had, he's carried this team all by himself. But again, it goes back to there's only 12 spots. Like, you can only have so many players. There's always snubs every year. It's just more glaring when he's practically leading the league in scoring. I mean, he's had an incredible
year. And that's why, remember what I said last week? I figured, you know what, if there's another wrinkle we can throw into it, seeing as Brad has consistently, for the past 4 years, been voted higher by the players than he has been in the fans when it comes to All-Star voting, especially for Eastern Conference guards, why not make the top 10 All-Stars voting, just those top 10, is all-player vote? Let them be voted by their peers, the guys who run up and down the court with them every single day. Let that top 10 be voted by them. Then after that, the coaches and the fans can get involved after that. But I really think it's fair. If you're saying my favorite athlete, I'm making this up because it's not true. But say I'm a super, super LeBron fan. And LeBron is
saying, you are. Stop it. I know you love LeBron. You quit it.
No, I will not. No, I will not. I will never cave. Say LeBron's like, hey, Bradley Beal is that guy. I want him in. If I'm a LeBron fan, I can't then sit there and fix my face and say, no, Bradley Beal's not that dude. Give me Trae Young. The player you admire most, it's your favorite player's favorite player. Come on. Bradley Beal should be in the dang All-Star. So I think we can fix that.
Yeah, you know I'm over the fan voting as much as it is, too, because it just gets over the top. When Taco Fall and Alex Caruso were getting votes and they're in the top 10, it's laughable. So he's at Real Wes Hall on Twitter. We're up tonight, 9 o'clock as opposed to 10 o'clock on DC Sports Live on NBC Sports Watch. My voice is back. I have so many things to say. I've already petitioned for 2 hours instead of 30 minutes for the show tonight. I don't think it's going to happen, but just be
we'll
prepared,
try.
My friend.
Brother, I miss you. I can't wait to see you later on. I'm glad you got rested up, and I'll see you in a few hours.
All right, buddy. I'll see you soon. There he goes. Wes Hall, co-host, of course, Alexa Shaw, co-host as well, DC Sports Live tonight. At 9 as opposed to 10 o'clock. There's a new Jordan Reed report that just came out. It does not bode well for his future in the NFL. That's next. Nick Ashew in for Grant and Danny on The Fan. Jordan Reed, according to Rhiannon Walker and Ben Standigo, The Athletic, remains in the concussion protocol almost 6 months after that hit, if you remember, that caused his 7th documented concussion. He's still in the concussion protocol 6 months. Not 6 weeks. Not 6 days. 6 months after this. I don't think there's anybody in this city that doesn't appreciate Jordan Reed, that doesn't love Jordan Reed, that doesn't look at the one really good year that he had, his career year, and say, so much potential, so much talent, could not stay healthy. There's nobody that should look at this and say he should continue playing. Jordan Reed has got to retire. Jordan Reed has to think about life after football. And I understand, because people that are close to him have said, people within his family have told him it's probably time. Like, there are individuals within Jordan Reed's inner circle and family and group and trust, however you want to describe them, that want him to hang it up, that want him to think about life after football. But it's hard. Like, I was joking about it at the top of the show when I was like, I lost my voice for a couple days and I couldn't work. Like, I just had to take sick days. Like, everything else was fine. I just couldn't. And I was antsy. I wanted to get back. I wanted to do this show. I wanted to do normal show every night, DC Sports. Like, I wanted to do that stuff, and I couldn't do it. So imagine being an athlete that deals with injury after injury after injury, and your body failing you and not allowing you to do what you've done your entire life, which, by the way, when you were younger, has probably worked better and done things physically that no one else around you could do in high school and maybe even in college. And you get to this point, especially concussions, where guys maybe don't have all those lingering symptoms. They don't have the headaches. They don't deal with all of the side effects. And they think, ah, I'm good, man, I'm fine. And then it gets worse, and it continues to happen. That's why they say documented concussions. Who knows how many he's had? I don't know. Maybe it's just seven. Maybe it's more. I don't know. But this goes so far above and beyond football and what his career could be. I understand, only to a point, clearly, but I get it, and everybody should understand why he hasn't just said, okay, I'm done, I'm retiring now. You know, like, we're shocked when NFL players retire early because it is rare. Because, like, what Andrew Luck did is really difficult. A guy that could have been an all-time great quarterback whose prime was wasted by a horrible Colts organization that couldn't build an offensive line, had a terrible GM, a bad coach, and wasted Andrew Luck, where he was constantly getting beat up because they couldn't block for him. And he just said, you know what, screw it, I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't blame him. But it's such a big deal because we don't see that much. Like, you just don't. Because if you are someone that has done this for your entire life, now some guys, yes, they play football because they're like, well, this is a paycheck for me, I'm fine, I'll do it as long as I can, and I'm out. But they're not really passionate about it, right? There's plenty of pro athletes that aren't passionate about necessarily what they do. But a majority of them are, because you don't get to this level of success without some sort of type A personality, at least a pretty decent competitive nature. Now, physical gifts are going to help you get to there somewhat, but then to get to that next level, you've got to have the other attributes. Like, you've got to be talented, but you've also got to have the mindset to say, I want to be better, to be competitive, have that type A personality, be dedicated to this. And it's hard. Like, this has been Jordan Reed's entire life. It's not the only thing, and hopefully he realizes it's not the only thing. But, like, we're seeing all these moves made right now by Ron Rivera and the rest of the coaching staff, and it's like, Jordan Reed's got to be one of them. Jordan Reed has got not just be released, he needs to retire. Because there is life after this. And I can remember when I was working over the other station years ago, one of the things we did sometime, the NFL has this internship program where they'll take active players right now and they'll put them in the offseason in places, whether it's media, whether it's, I don't know, finance, whatever you want to do, and they'll allow them to basically be interns in these businesses to allow them to learn, build a resume, so when you're done playing football, whenever that is, you then have the necessary skills and you have the qualifications to get a job outside of football if that's what you choose to do. Now, some guys want to go into broadcasting because they want to still be around football. Some guys decide they want to go and have a bunch of car dealerships, or they want to get into finance, or they don't know. A lot of guys don't know, and that's the hard part. So to have this ability to prepare ahead of time for players, to have that mindset, that forward thinking of there is life after football, both physically, mentally, and professionally, you have to be able to do that. And I hope there's enough people around Jordan Reed that are telling him that this is the approach that you need to have. Because that's, like, we only pay attention to what these guys deal with on the field, right? Like, in the end, that's what it is. I think fans still, it's less today, but it's still very prevalent. Like, we look at them and just think of, oh, they're athletes. You don't think about, like, they got kids. They got family. They got friends. They have to figure out their life after they're out of the spotlight. And some guys stay in it, and a lot don't. Most don't. And then you kind of move on. This is why I always say, fair or unfair, this is the truth. Athletes are appliances. And the minute you start breaking down and making a clunking sound, you're replaced by a shiny new fridge. Or a brand new oven. It may not be fair, but it's the truth. You watch so many players get cut, get bought out, get traded. And that's why I've always been so pro-player empowerment in sports. All of it. To a point. Paul George asking for that trade to the Clippers after like a year in Oklahoma City after signing his extension is like, really? That's crossing the line. That's too much. But these guys get drafted by whatever team takes them. Then they've got maybe restricted free agency. It's rare that a lot of them have a true opportunity to decide where they're going to play, where their career is going to go, where they're going to live, where they're going to move their family. Like, you have that opportunity for the most part, right? You could get offered a job in Milwaukee and decide, I want to go live in Milwaukee. It's cold. They got a lot of beer. I don't know why you would, but you can go live in Milwaukee if you want. They got a lot of cheese, too. Or, hey, there's an opportunity for me in L.A., San Francisco, New York, Albuquerque, whatever. You have that decision where you can leave your job, unless you're under contract, and go take that new job. As a professional athlete, you don't really have a lot of opportunities to control your life, your narrative, your decision-making, where you're going to work. So I always, all four players, taking advantage of that when they can. But sometimes, too, taking advantage of that means not playing anymore, not doing what you love. And I think that's really hard. And one thing I do hope is that the NFL does continue to get better about giving their players opportunities. One, in terms of health, right? Healthcare and all that. We've seen all the lawsuits and see if it really actually works out long term for these guys. But two, giving them opportunities more and more to have something that they can get into out of football. Now, it's not just providing them jobs, but giving them the programs and the opportunities to have a second career, because it's not going to last forever. Whether you're 29 or 39, or in Tom Brady's case, 59, you're going to have to retire at some point in every sport. So in the end, I hope Jordan Reed figures out what's most important to him. Hope he's healthy. But the Redskins have got to move on, and he's got to move on too. It's just too much. 6 months. 6 months still in the concussion protocol. I'm sorry. That's scary. That's just scary. All right, coming up, Josh Norman and Paul Richardson are gone. And you better brace yourself for a lot more Redskins fans. Nick Ashew in for Grant and Danny on The Fan. Certainly when you hear that he's been in the concussion protocol still now for 6 months, you think that, but you're then setting a precedent if you're the NFL. And I understand his case is certainly much more extreme after 7 documented concussions and 6 months still in the concussion protocol since that hit in the preseason. But, like, where do you draw the line? Like, I'm with you. There's a certain point where guys just physically should not, like, concussions are getting the point. Like, but how do you draw that line? How do you say, okay, you've now crossed into the threshold of we're not allowing you to play? Is it a certain amount of concussions? Is it a certain amount of time in the concussion protocol? Do you ever allow them to go back? Like, I'm with you. I don't want to see Jordan Reed play anymore. I don't. I wanted to see him play, but not with this. Not with this report from the Athletic. Not with how long it's taken him to just recover at this point. Just thinking about his future. I don't know the guy personally. I've talked to him like once or twice. But like, you just don't want to see somebody get to the point where by like 45 years old, they're bedridden. Like, we don't know all of the effects still of concussions. We're still learning a lot of that. But we know this. Head injuries aren't good. And Jordan Reed is in a position now where he has to think about his life after football more than anything else. I think that's one of the most important things. Anthony in Warrington, what's up?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I would make differ that these athletes make, you know, more money than I will in a few years in my entire lifetime. And they have the opportunity to invest that money in small businesses, large businesses, or just, you know, any way they can throughout their career where they don't really need a post-career plan. And Jordan Reed, as far as he goes, man, I mean, he needs, like you said, he needs to just hang it up. There is life after football, and hopefully he's been wise with his money and has spent it in a way where he can function and set up his family for generations.
Yeah, Anthony, thanks. Here's the only thing with that. Just because you invest in businesses doesn't mean you're making a smart business decision. Like, anybody at 22, 23 years old, you get handed millions of dollars. Most aren't going to know what to do with it. Like, you're not Mark Zuckerberg. Like, most people, you don't. I know I wouldn't. You give me a $5 million signing bonus, I'm like, woo, I'm buying a Mercedes. Maybe a Ferrari. And then I'd make smarter decisions maybe when I was older. But you have to put, it's good to see players be put in positions where they can learn to set themselves up for success. That's all. Yeah, granted, you can throw out the easy blanket statement and say, well, yeah, they made so much money and they should be set. But sometimes, too, it's also being put in a position where you know what the hell to do with that money. Because it's very easy to blow millions of dollars. It's very easy. And yeah, some of that's their own fault, but some of it's also working with bad people. Like, if you go back and look at, I think it was Tim Duncan actually got screwed by a financial advisor, I want to say, not too long ago. It happens. Like, these guys think that it's somebody that they trust and they're trying to make a smart decision financially, and it turns out to be the complete opposite. So there's certainly that risk of that. I do hope that Jordan Reed, though, does hang it up. In the end, there's going to have to be some tough moves from the Redskins. A lot of tough moves. You've got a whole new coaching staff and front office and training staff. Like, it's a whole new regime that's there. Norman and Richardson is just the beginning. Those guys getting released, you better be ready for a lot more moves, and moves that are going to make fans upset, too. I think that's what people don't realize, that there are going to be some players that possibly get released or traded, probably released, that you still want to see in a Redskins uniform. And it's going to be hard because the nostalgia, the fan connection is going to be there. But you've got to understand, that connection doesn't exist for Ron Rivera or anybody else that's there. And they have to think about the future of this organization and getting younger. And that's one of the things Ron Rivera said he was going to do, was he wants to make this team younger. And that's the right move. That's the way that you need to approach this. First thing they've got to do, though, like, all right, so you cut a couple of guys. You need to figure out, like, what is your competitive advantage going to be, your identity as a Redskins? Like, I'm thinking about this, and this is the very early stages. I know we're not even at the draft right now, but this is one of the things that Ron Rivera and his coaching staff in the front office has to think about. What is your competitive advantage? What is your identity? Because for years, we've been having conversations about this team going, what are the Redskins exactly? Are they a running and defensive team? Well, we think they kind of want to be that way. And then it seemed like under Callahan, they kind of were. But that was also awful to watch, and it wasn't very successful. And you got to figure out what your identity is, not just as a team on the field, but as an organization. You know, is it all about toughness? Is it unity, a tight locker room? Like, those types of things translate on the field, but they start in the locker room. They start in practices. They start in off-season workouts. It's not always about what you necessarily do on the field. And you got to be able to bring in guys that fit that mold, fit that attitude. And that's why, like, I get it. Everybody was making jokes, and some people were complaining about Ron Rivera bringing in half of, like, the staff from Carolina. But if he has an idea, and he's got a road that he's going to travel down, he says, this is what I want to do. I need people that can be in the car with me and know the exact same direction we're going. And that's what he's been doing. Like, you've got to create some sort of narrative and focus on who you are as a team, too. Because it's a lot harder to beat a team that knows their identity. Everybody knows their role. They know what type of team they are, what type of organization they are. That trickles down, and that becomes something that's it's much more helpful. It's much more helpful for them. There's a long to-do list that's still there. It started, though. I mean, clearly, the tough roster decisions started with Josh Norman, Paul Richardson, although I'd argue Paul Richardson was an easy decision, but it's still somebody that was a big free agent signing that they paid like a wide receiver one. That clearly wasn't a wide receiver one. He's gone. Josh Norman's gone. You save money because neither one of those guys was worth the money they were going to be paid right now. But then the tougher ones are coming. Ryan Kerrigan is the glaring one to me because none of his $11.7 million is guaranteed this year. They probably can't get much if they trade him. Do you release him? Do you allow him an opportunity to go sign with a team that could win a Super Bowl? Do you keep him around because he could maybe be more productive in the system, or at least be semi-productive? He still was relatively productive last year, and we know he had 13 sacks each of the 2 years before, you know, last year, and you look at the numbers, could he get back to that in this system? There's a lot of questions there, but there's also a lot of money. And the Redskins are moving to a 4-3. You want Montez Sweat to be much more involved in the defense. We saw that to the tail end of last year. You're hoping they're drafting Chase Young. Sometimes you got to move on from fan favorites, and Ryan Kerrigan may end up being one of those. Jordan Reed, clearly somebody they have to move on from now, and he needs to retire. We've looked at the Trent Williams scenario. There's a chance maybe he comes back. You're going to need him at least for a year, but he's going to want to get paid more. So where do you handle that this offseason? Do you end up just trying to trade him again or cutting him? Or do you, now that it's all new people in the building, you look at it and go, well, maybe we can keep him because, I don't know, you kind of have to protect your quarterback. You need somebody at left tackle. I don't think Penn's going to be somebody you can count on for an entire year again. He was sort of a Band-Aid that they had to keep the entire season. But, like, you got to figure that out. These roster moves are not going to make you happy somewhat. There are going to be fans that are looking at this go, what are you doing? Russell was talking about it this morning. Could Adrian Peterson be a guy that's cut? I would keep him because you don't have a lot of healthy, consistent running backs behind him, though you have talent. You need him just, but you could go get anybody. You could draft a running back and be fine with that. You could pick up another running back off the free agent market, and there are certainly options there. I would prefer to keep Adrian Peterson, but this is what happens when it's a new regime in house. Everybody's jobs are up for grabs. I'd also do this if I'm Ron Rivera. Move every non-football person out of Ashburn. Get them out. Rent office space somewhere in Loudoun County. If you don't handle football only, get away from the players and coaches. This isn't how every facility is. Like, a lot of times you've got football people and then other team personnel far away, an owner away. Like, they don't need all of this access. You don't need to be able to walk to the owner's office. Get rid of that. Change that. It's one of the smallest team facilities. There's way too much interaction. That's why we had so many leaks for so long. And that's one of the things that Ron Rivera can do, is just say, I want everybody out. Here's how much power I have. You don't handle football. You don't handle football. We've rented office space in this office park 20 miles down the road. Your commute is now there. You've got to be able to do that. You have to. I want people away so there's no leaks and it's all about football. I'll say this too. If Ron Rivera can do this and cure Dwayne Haskins' social media addiction, that would be the ultimate accomplishment. Because I don't care that he's young. He's not a normal 22-year-old. I get it. Everybody that's 22, I'm on social media all the time. I'm not 22, but I'm on social media all the time. But just last week, Dwayne Haskins retweeted some video of him where the film was being broken down and saying it was basically showing that he could run. And he quote tweeted it and said, they said I couldn't run. You're clearly searching your name on Twitter to look for things about you because he wasn't tagged in it. And even if somebody tags you in the comments, just don't. Just focus on actually proving that you are the starting quarterback in the future of this organization. There are so many expectations for Dwayne Haskins. Huge expectations. This massively bright spotlight. And I want him to be the unquestionable starter week one for this team. I don't want it to be a debate. I don't want it to be, did he really win the job, or is it just because they drafted him in the first round? I want it to be Dwayne Haskins has grown up. He has improved. He's worked hard this offseason, and he's ready to go. Put down the phone and spend more time building on the progress that you made last year. Get into the program that they've got now in the offseason. Focus on that. Because what you can do that's so dangerous, and it's not just with social media, but it's a big one, because you have easy access to all the information, is buying into your own press. Don't buy into your own press. And I hope that's one of the things that Ron Rivera can do with Dwayne Haskins especially. Whether it's good or it's bad, whatever it is about him, stay level. You're young. You got a lot to prove. You got a lot of talent. But stay level. Don't buy into the negative press. Don't buy into the positive press. People say you had a great game. Cool. Move on. Don't retweet a bunch of Pro Football Focus videos that are breaking down a great throw you had. We don't need you to do that for us. We see it. It's fine. Because that starts to creep into your mind, and that becomes a big deal. That's just not something you want. That's not something you want to think about. If Ron Rivera can do that, and maybe bring in some more veteran-type players, and maybe Greg Olsen is one of them. There's no movement right now. I'm looking. Trust me. Everybody's checking to see if he's picked a team by now. Hadn't picked a team. I know he's 35, but he would be a nice veteran addition for this team, and they desperately need somebody to play tight end for them. Greg Olsen would be somebody that guys would listen to in that locker room. If you want to be a young team, you still have to have some veterans that are in there that players respect. Greg Olsen would be one of those guys. And trust me, I don't want to see them pay a ton of money for him, and hopefully they wouldn't, but it would be fantastic if they could lock him up. Besides, why don't go to Buffalo? It's cold. That lake effect snow? Good Lord, no. No thanks. I want to go nowhere near that if I'm him. I saw this too. Why it's very clear that Ron Rivera can change this culture more than any coach that's come through under the Dan Snyder era. I saw something that isn't getting enough attention. I'll explain why it's so important next. Nick Ashew in for Grant and Danny. Ron Rivera is making me more and more confident that he may finally be the guy to change the culture and really take control of this Redskins organization. Now, I know We've been here before. I've said it myself. I'm tired of having my heart broken. And I friend zone my teams. Yes, Sean, I friend zone my you love when I talk about the friend zone, don't you? You love it.
Absolutely.
But it works. It keeps me from getting hurt, man. Even though I took the Nationals out though, and I was able to enjoy it. Once they win, it feels a lot better. But with the Redskins, we've just been so frustrated for so long. And even after the Ron Rivera press conference, you say, well, I remember Marty Schottenheimer. I remember Mike Shanahan. I remember Jay Gruden. I sort of remember Jim Zorn. It was mostly just maroon and black, but that was a whole other thing. So we've heard coaches come in before, and really with any team. When you're the head coach, you're not going to walk in and be like, yeah, so my plan for this team is, I'm not really sure. We'll see. We're going to have Pizza Fridays. And you're going to come in and say you're going to change the culture and make it better because 95% of the time, unless a coach retired, that team is bad that you're taking over. But Ron Rivera has given me this strong indicator that he actually can change the culture because of the respect he still has in Carolina. People listen to him. There were hundreds of Carolina fans that showed up in Charlotte not only to say goodbye to him, he was raising money for the Charlotte Humane Society, and he had a yard sale, basically. Selling a lot of his Panthers gear, signed shirts, memorabilia, it all went to the Humane Society. Raised over $30,000. And a ton of fans showed up to this. If Jay Gruden or Mike Shanahan or, God forbid, Jim Zorn did the same thing in D.C., people would show up and throw eggs or other various pieces of food. That's what it would be. When a coach is fired, they're usually the villain. And when they're not, it's very rare. And that is a good sign. This is like exes that can actually stay legit friends. That's really rare. But every once in a while, it does happen where they're like, we're actually better off friends. And they get along and it's legit just friendship. And it's that rare platonic situation where it works out. Usually doesn't. But there are rare situations where it does. Time ran out. There's a strong bond there. It's the same thing with Ron Rivera. The time ran out. The team wasn't doing well. They felt like they needed a new voice. They moved on. And there's still all this respect for Rivera from the top down there, former players. I mean, look at how many people from Carolina came over to work with him in D.C. already. That's a very good sign because that means he's going to walk into this building and be the big swing and you know what, and everybody's going to have to pay attention. And I love this, and I know we've been here before, but this is another line on his resume to wave around Ashburn. You see everybody down there in Charlotte? They still care about me. Why? Because they respect me. Why? Because I'm a winner and because I'm going to make this organization better. Everybody get in line or you're out. That's what you have to do. You've got to walk in this building, and he already has, and it's very early. And what's the first thing he did? He got rid of the ping pong table. And it made everybody happy that hated the ping pong table. But that went to a bigger narrative, right? Like that was we're not going to have a lot of fun right now until we start winning. Because perception is incredibly dangerous and it's sometimes misleading, but in the end, it's the only truth that you have out there. When you see a team that is winning, perception is that they can have fun and it's okay. But if you're losing, you can't be having fun. Why are you smiling? Why are you smiling after a game? Why are you exchanging jerseys? Why are we doing this? You're 3-13. That's when it changes. And Ron Rivera brings that respectability. And hopefully, too, that respectability goes from not just us as fans, but players. You get some quality free agents. You've gotten some good coaches clearly coming in now. Coaches that he trusts. People that, like I said, he's driving down a road. And he says, this is the direction we're going. Here's the GPS. You guys all on this ride with me? Hop in. If not, see you later. That's what it has to be. But it is very, very rare to see somebody as well-respected after they're gone as Ron Rivera. And I think that's one of the most important early tells that we have that tell us that there's something legit there. Now, in the end, you have to win. If they don't win, it's not going to matter. No one's going to care what he says in a press conference. But that's the start. This is the start. We'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see what happens in free agency. And then the most important thing is going to be training camp and then the regular season. That's where they need to be. But you'd have to spend the time now at least looking at early indicators to say, all right, this thing may work. This thing actually has a possibility here. And I feel confident about it. And maybe I'll regret these words. I might. But right now, it feels good. The Wizards are only 3 games back right now of a playoff spot. Will they be a better team post-All-Star break? We'll ask Chris Miller next.